I love long-term goals because I love the unreachable. So in that way, you always keep going.
This is the Creative Voyage Podcast, a long-form interview show with the mission to help creative professionals level up. I'm your host, Mario De Picozuan. I'm a creative professional myself, active in the fields of art direction, graphic design, and consulting. This podcast features insightful conversations with some of the world's most inspiring creatives, reveals the stories that shape their lives and careers, and offers actionable strategies to help you take your mindset and skills to the next level. I invite you to join me on this journey. We'll be back in a second to talk about illustration, freelancing, and managing our growth in these times of distraction. But first, a quick message about our upcoming online workshop. The Mindful Creative Year just opened for enrollment. The deadline to join this January session is December 31st, midnight. So you have these last days and hours of 2021 to join us and start your new year with a dedicated space for reflection, intent, and strategic planning.
Before the workshop, I used to get like very stressed with projects, and then I kind of understood that in order for me to enjoy like doing the work that I do, I need to work on those things as well. And little by little, I think that I've built like a routine and like a lifestyle that keeps me a little bit away of those things that I think that keep me back, like comparing myself or thinking that I'm not ambitious enough or that sort of things that we often find on social media.
I started like to work as an independent designer. I had lots of things in my mind. I didn't know how to start. And the workshop really helped me to have clear objectives of what I wanted to achieve. It made me realize like many things I wanted, not only for the business, but in many aspects of my life. So it made me see like what I really wanted in each area and make it clear.
I'm excited to share that the Mindful Creative Year workshop is back. This online course and community will provide insights into a sustainable and personalized planning system designed to align your inner compass and actions, map out your aspirations, and achieve a fulfilling professional and personal year.
Even though you have a lot of things that you want to do, you can do only certain things in one day or one week. Definitely like trying to prioritize what needs to be done and how I can help others at the same time. Me being sort of a recent graduate and more of a newcomer into the design industry, it's been sort of hard me trying to learn and then also do some of my own practice at the same time. So having that schedule and a set of goals did help a lot. Sort of that consistency was what I needed.
Everybody who was there, or at least I speak for myself, but I feel that everybody else was there because we already wanted to change something about the way we work. And it was just like a guide to start that journey of what steps to take first to start changing the way we work. And I started organizing my personal life and my work life.
And also I think that I've become a little bit more intentional with what I do. I used to take just projects that came to me. And right now I'm trying to focus more on just doing whatever I want to do just to grow and to see where it takes me, to at least have a healthy mindset to keep growing.
As ambitious creative professionals, we know that work and life can often seem overwhelming. Dealing with clients, crazy deadlines, tight budgets, managing our team, ourselves, and having a fulfilling and healthy personal life on top of that is a constant struggle. And we can easily find ourselves with another year behind us and we still haven't worked on that big dream, new business, a side or a passion project, or that persistent personal challenge. We all dream of living our best creative lives, but it's unlikely that will happen by pure chance. It will take a vision, work, dedication, strategy, and appropriate tactics. In this coming workshop, I'll share the core principles that I've learned over the years. I'll show you my yearly planning system and the mindsets behind it. It can be a seemingly straightforward process, but the challenge is to do it, and this workshop provides that setup and accountability. Most importantly, we'll all share our experiences.
Besides my own personal analysis of things, I think that it was really, really inspiring and motivating to listen to everyone in the workshop. That really gave me the chance to be a little bit more flexible even with myself. In the beginning, it sounds very ambitious to have this different set of goals, but with time they start to develop and you start to understand them and really take them with you.
There's work ahead, it's worthwhile, and it should be directed well. Will you let another year pass without intentionally approaching your ambitions in work and life? I hope you'll consider joining us. Visit creative.voyage/newyear to find out more. In this episode, I talk to an illustrator and an artist.
I am Chidi Wayne. I live in Barcelona. I am an artist and illustrator, and that's basically who I am.
Chidi Wayne is a Spanish-Guinean illustrator and artist based in Barcelona. He works in various media, including painting, design, animation, and music. His expression is influenced by the most prominent fashion illustrators of the 20th century, often characterized by his poetic and precise use of pen, ink, and watercolors, and more than any medium, is distinguished by a sense of groundedness and timelessness. Chidi has worked for clients such as Harvard University, Kinfolk, Nike, Vogue, Mango, Esquire, Kindsurf, and New York Magazine, to name a few. He has also published several books describing different technical and conceptual techniques to address and solve some of the challenges specific to fashion illustration. In this episode, we're going to listen to the highlights of the conversation I had with Chidi in July 2021. We cover topics such as the importance of knowing ourselves, Chidi's work routines, managing finances as a freelancer, the importance and challenges of personal growth in the face of modern distractions, advice for young creatives, his views on the craft of illustration, including style and trends, and much more. For Chidi, it took him a while to realize that a creative path was a legitimate path for him to embark on. Growing up in a small town, Chidi was not surrounded by creative professionals. There was no creative industry that was not a part of his environment. In his late teenage years, he was introduced to cool hunting through a documentary on the Spanish national TV covering some of the future professions. It was something entirely new for him, and even though he wasn't interested in cool hunting, that piqued his curiosity. It opened the door to other possibilities, that there was another world outside of his home. Not long after, he started ordering international fashion and style publications at the local magazine shop and getting inspired by those creative worlds. However, when Chidi went to college, he started studying economics, mostly just following a trend, because he still didn't know who he was. But he did know that the world of numbers was not for him. With the awareness of those other possibilities blooming inside of him, he started his transition to a creative journey. I began my conversation with Chidi asking him about the advice he would give his younger self during those early days and suggestions for creatives who are starting their professional journeys today.
In my beginnings, when I went to college, I was studying economics. That's because I didn't know who I was at that time. So I was just following, the trend. Just, okay, everybody's doing this, I'm going to do this. But I knew that wasn't me. I never knew what to do other than following that trend. I think it's very important in life to do things you don't like before doing what you really like. Maybe you are lucky enough to always do what you please, but I think it's a very important lesson to do things you don't want to do. That's what happened to me when I was studying economics. I was also working part-time in a business related to numbers and economics and Excel. I know I was not going to be happy doing that.
Yeah.
And I think because one of those magazines, fashion was always something that was into my mind. I was attracted to fashion. I remember not having enough money, but wanting to wear certain t-shirts, for example. So I started to design my own t-shirts, to do prints. I was doing this at the same time I was studying in college. And a certain time, I did a project, like a professional project, about those T-shirts and about selling them. Mm-hmm. So little by little, I was aiming to a different point. I was using that knowledge in marketing or economics. I was using that platform, but I was aiming it to a different position, which was fashion.
Yeah.
So I spoke with my parents and I told them, listen, guys, I don't know what I'm doing here. I really need to leave and develop something that I really find interesting. And not also that something that I think I can make something in. Not only because I like it, because I think I have this little background designing my T-shirts. So it's not just that I like buying stuff. So because I like to buy clothes, I'm going to be a designer. It wasn't like that. And they trust me. So that's when I came to Barcelona to study fashion design. So that's the first step into creativity for me.
Yeah.
I was very happy doing fashion, but at the same time, I was extremely happy drawing. Mm-hmm. So doing fashion was my way to discover drawing.
Yeah.
I used to draw when I was a kid, maybe in high school as well, but then I stopped drawing my mannequins, doing my sketches. I discovered something else there as well. I finished my studies in fashion. I was selling my collections here in Madrid. Mm-hmm. But I guess I was also, I tasted the poison already. And that poison, that good poison in somehow, was art, was drawing. So economics brought me to fashion, and fashion brought me to drawing and arts in general. And that's where I am now.
Yeah.
So even though I started as a fashion designer, mm-hmm. in my creativity process, I started working and living as a fashion designer. I also realized I was way happier working by my own, not needing a team. I guess I understood who I am, and I am a loner. I like to work by myself. I like to establish my schedules. I just like to do things alone, I guess.
Yeah.
And also, I could see I was good doing it. Mm-hmm. I could also see, because as I said before, it's not only what you want to do or what you like to do, because sometimes you also have to ask to yourself, I am good at it. Because I might like other things and recognize, hey, you're not that good. Maybe you cannot contribute to the world doing that. So I could see I was good at drawing.
And I mean, now you've been working independently, right, for almost 15 years, right? I think you started in 2007?
Yeah, 2007. But at that time, I was also working as a bartender. Mm-hmm. I was DJing as well. I would say working only as an illustrator, starting point would be 2011. So yeah, this year, in fact, it would be my 10th anniversary as a professional in this field.
So in hindsight, if you could teleport yourself back 10 years ago and give like a piece of advice to younger Chidi, what would it be?
Somehow, I think I followed the right path. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm doing now. I mean, not doing this from the very beginning is not a failure at all. Not doing this since I was 18 is not bad. That was my path. So not the younger Chidi, but younger ones, I would say, listen, I had this revelation having a professor during summer because I failed mathematics and physics during that course. I never studied, mm-hmm. not a single day. And I obviously failed those, mathematics and physics.
Yeah.
So my parents said, okay, so now during the summertime, you have to study. And they found this teacher. And he was such an interesting guy. He was living with his partner, who was another scientist. Mm-hmm. So both scientists, brilliant scientists, both of them. And I remember seeing them when I was going to their place. They were both like drinking their whiskey, smoking, while doing their exercises and thesis and their works for the university. I could really see happiness in there, but they were working. At the same time, I was seeing people working and being extremely comfortable, extremely happy, fulfilled. Mm-hmm. And he told me, nobody wants to work, but at the same time, you have to work. So you have to find a way where your work and your life is the same thing. So when you're working, you're just making your work your life. If you cannot really separate both worlds, you're never going to feel, oh, I have to go to work. You're just going to feel, okay, there are things I have to solve, like in real life. Okay, so there are things I have to solve. Let's do it. When you wake up, okay, I have to make breakfast. No, I have to solve this.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Let's mix eggs with whatever. So try to make your work your life. That was the big, big revelation. This is something I would definitely tell any kid, mm-hmm. or my own kid, as I'm a father. That's something I think is very, very important. Also, the kids of today who are starting in a creative path, I would say to them that they don't have the urge to show everything they are doing on social media. Mm-hmm. Because when you're young, as humans, but maybe when you're young, you are more weak against the fact that you need the approval of the others. Mm-hmm. I see there is a risk of showing things and wanting approval. So you start doing things that you know by your experience, that you know that they are going to get more approval, more applauses, more likes and comments. Mm-hmm. And maybe that gets you trapped into things that gets lots of applauses, but that's not really what you want to do. So I would tell them to really explore before start showing what they do. On the other side, you have to show people what you're doing.
Yeah.
Not because you want their approval, but you also want critics. It is not art if it stays in the closet.
Yeah.
You have to show it, of course, but yeah, not looking for those likes, right?
Yeah.
And also, I want to remark what I said before about not only to the young me, don't do only what you please. Don't do what makes you comfortable, because that's something that's been said a lot in the last decade. I know you really have to do what makes you feel happy. And you got to be honest with yourself and ask if you're good enough to do what makes you happy. Mm-hmm. Because at the same time, you want to make a living of that. And if you only have those family and friends telling you you're good, but you're not really that good, the other people, they don't know you as a person. And they're going to judge what you do by that, not only by your person.
Yeah.
I think young people should develop their own taste, not staying on the surface, but going to the roots, going to the origins of whatever it makes them feel vibrant. At the end, culture is everything in the creative world. So you have to develop your culture, your taste. Maybe this is obvious, but yeah, you have to travel and you have to meet people to see other realities. Even if you want to stay in your hometown, I think it is very positive to, yeah, just don't be in a hurry to finish high school and start college and just take your time. Because when you start college, you're 18 years old. When you are 18 years old, you're a kid. You really don't know who you are. It takes time. It is such a big step to decide what's going to be your future, studying this or that. Although I don't think university, it is the only way to success, especially in the creative field.
Yeah.
It might be one of the ways. But if that's the way you want to do, definitely don't be in a rush. That's what I tell them. And also to the other people, I will also say that if you're curious enough, you're not going to need college at the same time. If you're curious enough, also you have to be disciplined. Come on, everything's in your hand right now. You can just draw in pencil for beginners, and that's it. You can't go to museums online. And I mean, there is no secret in colleges for creatives. But of course, in colleges, you can find, there's the networking, right?
Yeah, the
you
community.
You can find this, yeah. this specific teacher that opens this world for you. And of course, in fact, that's what happened to me. When I was studying fashion, I had this teacher whose name is Berto Martinez, who's a prominent illustrator here in Spain. He opened my eyes. I mean, I wanted to be him, basically. I wanted to do what he does, the way he does, always looking at his works. I wanted to evoke what he's doing. And I learned a lot copying him.
Yeah.
And right now, I can say he's my friend. And I'm so happy he was in my path because he really changed everything for me. And now, he opened the door for me. He was taking my hand and also traveling with me in a certain time. I was ready to go by myself and to develop my own style. But thanks to him, I reached that style. So I find him thanks to Trio College. So I have to give my credit to that as well.
And what do you think was the most important thing you've learned from him?
Maybe I saw something similar in him to that other teacher I had, that mathematics teacher.
Yeah.
I saw his house full of books and comics and old magazines and references. I saw him drawing late at night. Maybe I romanticized a little bit the way he was doing it, but I loved it. I felt he was really connected with art. I wanted that life. I wanted to, I just want to be him so bad.
The work routines of an artist in a studio can sometimes be overly romanticized. However, the reality is, today, as independent professionals, freelancers, we often have an opportunity to customize and curate our workspaces and habits, which is one of the benefits of threading that path. Here, I talk to Chidi about his work routines.
I think in a workflow, I'm the artist cliche. I'm not very organized in a way that I do this from time to time and then I go blah, blah, blah. Definitely being a dad made me more organized. It's like now I can feel those 24 hours. I can feel there's a limit. I know when I can stay working and when I cannot stay working. That wasn't happening before. I could work until late at night. Mm-hmm. But now if I'm working until late in the morning at 7, 7.30 or 8, kid is going to get up anyways. So I better respect those hours during the night.
Yeah.
My workflow is given by my studio. Mm-hmm. A few years ago, I took this studio. I made a few, I reformed it by myself. So as soon as I come to my studio, I'm ready to work because I don't have a fridge here. I don't have food because I've been working from home several years. Maybe you know where it is. I'm feeling hungry. Oh, I think I can do this or I can do. As soon as I built my studio, I knew that couldn't happen. So now I only have things to create here. I would say there are three worlds in this studio. So one is the one directed to commissions, illustration. So if I have to develop a commission, then it's about researching. I have my books. I have my artistic references. Mm-hmm. And they are pretty solid. And I like to go again and again to the same books to see where I can find to inspire me. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I also use internet a lot. But you can see the results and say, oh, I really like what you're doing. But my sketches are so weak. My researches are done in a folio. in a DNA 4 folio.
Mm-hmm.
And I do these small squares and I put a few geometrical shapes to represent what I want,
mm-hmm.
to represent the composition. This is how I start, because I don't really, it's not that I'm practicing drawing. I like thinking before. I think a lot of what I want to draw, even if it's a commission and there's a specific theme. I would say that's the most important part in the way I create as an illustrator,
mm-hmm.
is to think about how I want to draw. And most of the times when I make my brush wet, it's because I'm doing the final work. I don't do sketches, and I try to go to the final piece. It's not that I like, I need the pressure of you have to make it now. If I have 2 months to make a work, probably I'm going to make it 2 days before the deadline.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how I work. It's not because during those 2 months, I haven't think about that particular commission. I have that commission in mind. Yeah, it's like I draw with my mind. I draw with my mind. And what I told you about this, my little sketches,
mm-hmm.
that's the step before I'm really drawing. Those, yeah, geometrical forms, putting some structure into the illustration, into the composition, and then doing it.
Yeah.
And then there's also the artistic part. So when I have to create something by myself, then that's when I sketch. That's when I loosely let my hand flow in a paper. In this case, I don't use a DNA 4. In this case, I'm using a DNA 3, bigger format. So I have more space to express because I really need my hand to flow.
Yeah.
When I'm creating art, I don't need to be that specific into details because my style, it is like that. So yeah, I'm doing few sketches. I like to pay attention to what I like, what I don't like. And with those extremely loose sketches, I'm always trying to control my mistakes. But sometimes I also let the mistakes to express. And at the end, it always happens that those mistakes lead one way,
yeah.
of doing that painting. And I say, yeah, you're right. It's like I say to that mistake, yeah, I think you're right. So I try to make an approach to the whole piece, guided by that mistake.
Yeah.
I was talking about two worlds in my studio,
yes.
the illustration, the artistic side of it. And I also have a little home studio because I love producing music. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, when I'm producing music, I'm very into it. But lately, I've been drawing a lot and painting a lot, listening to music. And something that really helps me to feel like I'm really home. When I say at home, I say home as me. I'm really in me. It's when I'm drawing, listening to music, and then I find something interesting in a particular song. So I go to the studio, to this piano I have here. So I start messing around these chords, trying to emulate that song or to continue some part of the song. So I'm a few minutes there, and then I go back to my painting or my illustration. So that's why the music studio, it also takes an important part in my day-by-day, my routines. When I'm in the studio, I don't go out for a walk or something, but that's my escape inside my studio. That's why it is so important in my day-by-day.
So I really like the flow that you've described, and all of it sounds also romantic. I'm curious, when and how do you do those, I guess, less romantic things like administration or invoicing or potentially, I don't know, business development or like all these other parts of, you know, being a professional creative?
Yeah, well, when I have to do this, I just say, I think I can do both on the same day. When it's like an ugly day, quoting, I just do it. But I just do that. okay, today I'm going to do all this paperwork because I don't want to ruin that romantic part you said before, you mentioned.
So basically you kind of try to kind of batch it in like a specific day or a part of the day and just get it over with and then you get back to it.
Yeah.
And how much time in like a ratio wise does that take? So let's say, you know, the creative part versus the admin part.
I don't know. Mentally, I try not to keep it as part of my routine. So when I have to do it, I just do it. And yeah, I try to do it the minutes, the hours I need to do it. And that's it. Yeah. But that definitely, this is not the exciting part of what I do.
Yeah. But I mean, it is an important part. I think it's like a crucial part in some way for many, especially freelancers, but also just other creatives. Do you have an agent?
Well, I just have a consultant, mm-hmm. like an advisor in administration, in legal, so I don't go to jail and I pay my taxes. And because if I had to do that, we would be doing this through a jail call. But because I paid somebody to do it for me, I have my taxes and everything on time.
Yeah.
But you were asking about an agent. Never had an agent. I tried to, but I don't know. I guess I'm not that profile. I've been able to find international customers, international clients, all without agents. And when I've been knocking doors to agents, I've never got positive responses. So I said, okay, maybe that's the way I have to do it by myself once again.
The Mindful Creative Your Workshop is back and open for enrollment. This online course and community will provide insights into a sustainable and personalized planning system designed to align your inner compass and actions, map out your aspirations, and achieve a fulfilling professional and personal year. Most people overestimate what they can do in a day or a week and underestimate what they can achieve in a year. Will you let another year pass without intentionally approaching your aspirations in work and life? You can join our January session by December 31st at midnight local time. Find out more at creative.voyage. Everyone is not meant to be a freelancer. It's not an easy path, and it's not for those who need a certain level of predictability, both in their work and often even more challenging, in their income. One of the main difficulties for independent creative professionals is making a living out of their craft. I've asked Gidi to share how he's managing that.
Right now, I would say it's half and half. I work between half of my earnings are commissions and half of my earnings come from my own art. It can vary from month to month, but more or less, right now it would be that way. When I started, it took me a while to establish myself financially. I remember in the beginning, I was struggling a lot with those invoices paid 90 days, for example, like 3 months.
Yeah.
So when there's agencies involved, and so I thought, okay, I get my piece of art, my illustration, my composition, whatever, and I get paid, but not. I learned that you have to wait. At the beginning, I struggled a lot with that. And at the end, I saw it as something positive, not the fact that I have to wait, but when I get to the point that I had a few of those unpaid invoices, unpaid during a certain time, of course. So that was kind of like savings in a way. So I saw it as a positive thing. But also, again, when I started having, I don't know, like 5, 10 invoices unpaid. So until I get to that point, the beginning, it was tough. It was tough because, well, you have to fight that circle of my name means nothing. Nobody knows me. So because nobody knows me, nobody wants to give me an opportunity. So it is hard to break that circle. But once you do it, and if you trust in yourself and you keep going, and you don't say, okay, I'm going to leave it, I'm going to do a different thing, it is a matter of time. If you're doing like a good job, it is a matter of time until somebody holds your hand and say, okay, let's see what you got there.
Yeah.
And yeah, I would say that part was very important to learn that you cannot count on that money immediately. You got to fight to achieve that moment when you get paid in a month, but not for what you have done in that month, but because of what you did 3 months before.
Yeah.
But then you have accumulated invoices. So in 1 month, you get X number of invoices paid, and you still have invoices to get paid in the following months. The problem is, obviously, when you have no invoice to receive.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is hard. It's not that it's hard. It's not for everybody. Financially, being freelance is not for everybody, because there is people who really need to know, okay, this month I have to get in my bank 100. And I really need to know this 100 because I organize my mind in that way that 20 goes to my apartment, 10 goes to my car. So it is not for everybody. Financially, as a creative, as a freelance, not a creative, because there are creatives having a particular amount every month. As a freelance, there are happier months and there are not so happy months. And yeah, you have to find the balance and never give up, because this is a long journey and it's not about what you did last month. You still have to keep going. And yeah, it is about consistency here.
Yeah,
it's about consistency.
And you said at the moment, the ratio between your commissions and your art is around like 50-50 when it comes to your income. How did that happen? Was it like from the start that you had this like balance and a combination, or did you introduce one or the other at some later point? How did that happen?
At the beginning, I was not doing my own art. Mm-hmm. At the beginning, I was only aiming at illustration, because it took some time to develop what I wanted to transmit as an artist. I needed some time to create my path, to establish my references and my language mm-hmm. as an artist. So during the time I was only doing illustration, in the beginning, I remember one day I said, this is hard. I have to go back and work in a restaurant or something, something that I already did while I was studying.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember this day when I said, no, I cannot really go back there. Not because I don't want to work in a restaurant, because I don't want to give up. And I trust in this. I knew that if anybody could see my work, I knew there were going to be somebody liking it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, I'm not doing crazy stuff here. It's not that I wanted to be likable to everybody. I just knew there were going to be some people liking it. So I decided to stay tight in money, but to continue this path of illustrator.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, patience is very important in this field in the beginning.
Yeah.
So I had patience, and at the end, I was lucky enough to be able to continue this job and to keep evolving and not having that struggle anymore.
Yeah. Are you satisfied with like where you are at the moment when it comes to like, I guess, that workload and cash flow?
I would say no. I would say, obviously, you can always do better, but it's not like you can do better financially. I think I still need to be seen by more people. I think there are way more people that they love my work, but they don't know yet. You know?
Yeah.
So in that way, I think I can do it better.
Yeah.
Not financially, but in a way that, yeah, I can approach to more people. And that will be given by time. I have no doubt that if I remain true to myself,
mm-hmm.
I will obtain that goal. I love long-term goals because, you know, I love the, like, unreachable. So in that way, you always keep going. I don't want to get satisfied about, okay, now I'm getting this amount of money and that's it. Because I'm not really doing it for the money. Obviously, I need the money because we live in a society that needs money. But I don't really do it for the money. I do it because I think I'm good at it and I enjoy doing it.
As Tristan Harris observed in his opinion piece for the New York Times, titled "Our Brains Are No Match for Our Technology," the real problem of humanity is the following. We have Paleolithic emotions, medieval institutions, and godlike technology. For our personal satisfaction and professional development, we need to carve out a dedicated space for our growth, not just move from one to-do to the other while checking our social media in between or probably even during those tasks. However, making those intentions a reality has always been a problematic human predicament, and all of it is becoming even harder under the influence of the godlike technology Tristan is worried about. Here, I wanted to discover how Chidi is navigating the topic of professional growth in his life.
I try to stay connected to what's going on and to what was going on as well. So I try to stay connected to the art.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep exploring, I don't know, Picasso. I mean, for me, it is always new for me, Picasso. I love it. I love that feeling like he has done so many things. You always find new stuff about him. I also need to be connected with what younger people are doing. Not because I want to do that, but because I don't want that generational gap. I don't want that to affect me that much. I don't want to be disconnected to what's going on. So I really pay attention to them. I'm not into those sentences like, oh, those young people, they don't know what to do or they don't. I really think I admire them and I envy them in some way, saying, wow, you recognize the tools you have, the digital tools, you embrace them, you act as they are natural for you because you were born with them. So, yeah, I just pay attention to young people, but at the same time, I pay attention to what has been done
mm-hmm.
because I don't think new things are good because they are new per se. So I try to pay attention to what has been good and the reason, and also what keeps me connected to my work, my art, is this fact that I love and I tend to ask questions to myself a lot.
Yeah.
As I told you before, somehow, at least when I'm working, I'm a loner. I'm alone in my studio. And as a classical artist, yeah, not a classical artist. Generally speaking, an artist has to be alone. That's how I see it. Because that's the only way you can really ask yourself hard questions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you can be honest about yourself. So that's really kept me also connected with my inner self and to make those questions and to be able not always to ask them, but at least doing those questions make me evolve.
Yeah.
Because I know there was times where I wasn't able to make those questions even to myself.
Mm-hmm.
But in my experience, when you start asking those questions, at the same time, you're giving the answers, but the important thing are the questions.
Yeah.
You aim at yourself.
Yeah. And can you give like an example of some of those questions that you pose to yourself?
Those are historically eternal questions. I'm not asking anything new, but those philosophical questions that we all ask ourselves, try to apply those questions to my art, like who I am, but not who I am as an individual, as my experience, as I want to show what my experience has been. Somehow I want to go deeper and not limiting my existence to what has happened to me. Because if it wasn't that way, if it was that way, then I would be speaking about me all the time. And I'm not speaking about me when I'm working. I'm speaking about the questions I have. And I know those questions, I know I share them with you and with almost everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I want people to make the journey with me when they see my art. So I think if I'm only speaking about my own experiences, my own character, yeah, they're going to see a portrait of me in a certain moment.
Mm-hmm.
But I want them to experience me and also themselves at the same time together. It's way more complex. It's somehow, maybe there are spiritual questions here, as you asked me before.
Yeah.
The only thing is that maybe I cannot put my thoughts in any specific way of thinking. But as I told you, it is general questions. Yeah. Who I am, who I'm fighting against. That's it. Yeah.
So yeah, I've been looking at the Pugna collection and I was really intrigued by the concept. And I think it probably leans to what you're describing now, that inner struggle.
Yeah.
And I think I really like the notion where you said that there's this like something within ourselves that pushes us and pulls us both like forward and backwards as we're trying to go towards our goal.
Yeah. Yeah. Because there are lots of negative things related to the fact that I'm working alone, obviously. And I have to fight against procrastination, for example, every day. We live in a moment where it is so easy to be by yourself. It is so easy, comfortable to stay with you and your screen. Not with you, you and your screen, you and your device, you and your phone. It is so easy. It's like the world is working. I mean, the most creative and brilliant minds, they are working their best to keep your attention. They are working in the most amazing apps and stuff to keep your attention. How can you fight that, being a normal human? How can you fight that and at the same time work? Because I don't have a boss here telling me what can or can I do.
Mm-hmm.
I could stay with my phone all day if I want to. I have to fight against that. I have to fight against the nostalgia of looking at pictures that I have in my phone since maybe 2011 or 2006. I don't know how old is my oldest picture. I have to fight against, it's not that I have to, we all have to, but being alone, those forces, they are pushing you to one way, you want to go to other way, and that's constant. And you really have to be into something or to be really elevated to stay away from those, I don't know how to say it, not incomes, but from, well, those external forces that are trying to attract your interest.
Yeah. And I think we're all in it. Like, it's a very universal kind of modern condition for many people. And it is, in the end, does become you, yourself, against those forces in the end. Nobody can... I mean, somebody can maybe assist you in certain environments and help, but it does come to like this almost individual level, which is shared by many of us. In this struggle or fight, do you have any your own like little personal insights or like tactics in this fight that kind of helps you get a bit of advantage or at least not lose?
Yeah, I think one tactic, it is to come to my studio and to have something already at least have done. I mean, if I come to my studio, which is something that I do every day, and I have to start from scratch, that's the hard part. That's the blank canvas fear.
Yeah.
To say what I'm going to do right now. I mean, this is empty. How I'm going to fill it. So that's the struggle. That's when you have to be focused. And at the end, by doing, that's when you do. I mean, by at least saying, okay, I'm going to take my pencil, I'm going to start moving it. I'm going to try to keep at least closer to what I have to do.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely that's the highest barrier you have. But if you can do it, if you can put you in that work mode,
mm-hmm.
then it's so easy. So I don't like to finish one thing one day, but to keep it half finished.
Mm-hmm.
So the following day, I go with extra energy because I've been thinking, I don't know, maybe at night, I've been thinking about that project or that painting. So the following day, I go extremely focused on what I have to do, because having it half finished or half in the beginning has drawn a path for me already. So the work draws the path for itself.
Yeah.
I find that circle very interesting. At the end, work brings you work and more energy to do more work.
Yeah, man.
I think, as you said, that struggle, it's going to be there. It's going to be there, and it's going to be way worse, I think.
Yeah.
So we better get prepared for that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it is quite a new, in some way, condition. Because, I mean, there was always something like that, but this time it's very different because it's powered by almost exponential technology and a lot of resources and money behind it. And I think the first step definitely is to become aware of it and kind of just try to step back. And then I have a hope that over time we're going to manage that and find ways. I think we're struggling culturally at the moment with that, but this is also a new challenge. So I hope that we're going to become better at it and in some way, like, you know, fight back.
I admire your positivity. I think the opposite. I think the opposite, because the tools we're using, because even though I do my paintings and my illustrations using watercolor, ink, crayons, acrylics, but then I had to make my photographies, I have to scan my work. Sometimes I do compositions with my scanned work, then I use Photoshop. So what I'm saying is that I use a computer as a part of my process. So I'm using the thing that is keeping me away from my inspiration, from my work. That's why I think it's going to be so difficult. I also use my telephone because through Instagram, for example, I find so many interesting artworks or pieces that really inspire me. So again, I'm using the devil to obtain things, but the devil is there and I'm not gonna see what I'm looking for. At the same time, I'm seeing other things, and those things are trying to keep me away from my focus.
Yeah.
And we're not gonna get away from those devices unless, I don't know, now we had a pandemic. Maybe in the future we have a technological pandemic somehow.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that could keep us away from our computers. But
yeah.
No, we're going to stay more and more connected, and those problems are going to be way harder. But as you said, at least we have to be aware of those problems. And so we can say, hey, put your effort in this other thing. And if not, you are totally lost.
At this point in our conversation, I was curious to hear about Chidi's challenges on his professional journey. Here's what he shared with me.
Because of the fact that I like to work alone, I always thought that working with others would diminish my work. And I realized that every time I've worked with creative directors, they have taken the best of me. Because they have said, some of them, they have said no to the first option. And that made me make some honest questions like, have you given your best? Because maybe you know you can do it and you have done it the easy way. So I love being challenged by different views and different ideas. So in that, when you add that view to your own view, in illustration, some of my best works, some of them, not all of them, but some of them come from my collaboration with creative directors. That was a challenge in the beginning, and now I embrace it as something very positive.
Yeah. Do you think it was almost like an ego thing at the beginning?
Yeah, sometimes being secure about yourself, about your work, it might lead you to compliance. You need other people saying, okay, why not add in this or that? It's not about ego, because I can easily reject my ego and accept other views if I think those views are adding more value to my drawing.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I'm going to be also very critic about, your view and I'm going to defend my view. If I trust in what I'm doing, at least I'm going to try to defend it. And if I'm doing that, it's because I see it so clearly that I'm going to fight. I'm really going to fight to defend it.
Yeah.
But in general, I like the surprise to say, listen, I was thinking about this. And at the end, we have this other result because we work together. And not because we work together. Yeah, that's a fact. We work together. But because I finally could translate what you had in mind into my drawings. Because at the end, that's me who's doing the physical work, the drawing, the painting. At the end, that's me. So when I finally realize what the other people is looking for, that's when everything matches.
As Henry Wadsworth Longfellow remarked, in character, in manner, in style, in all things, the supreme excellence is simplicity. And that is just one of the characteristics I enjoy in Chidi's approach. Here we talk about the craft of illustration, Chidi's influences, trends, style, and start by discussing the essential qualities and first steps for those who wish to develop as illustrators.
Observation, it is key in what I'm doing. And that helped me a lot in my first years. Deep observation means you have to look to the layers in what you are looking at. You have to look at the details. You have to see not only the layers, but who's behind that piece, who were the references for that artist. It is a chain that never ends. And you need to go as far as you can to achieve what the person you're looking at is doing. If you only doing what the person you admire is doing, you're going to be just copying the artist, copying him or her. And you want to go further so you can develop your own style. At the beginning, it's very important to emulate, to copy. But at the same time you copy, as I said, you have to be able to see more than the image. Yeah, and to be able to see who were the references of that, in this case, that illustrator you admire.
Yeah.
That's why, as I said before, that's why it is so important to develop not only your taste, but your culture. Only knowledge, only cultural knowledge is going to make you understand who's behind that piece of illustration. Because you can say, oh, okay, this is familiar. Maybe this is related to this or that. And to be able to do this exercise, you cannot only see illustration as something happening today and looking at the hot kids today. You really need to have a little bit of knowledge about what happened in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to know the history of art or the history of illustration in the 19th and 20th century. You don't need to know all the names and dates. But definitely it has to be something familiar to you, at least to be able to recognize a few periods or names. And then with that, then, I don't know, the internet can give you the rest of the gang. If you're looking for this artist, the internet will give you the rest of their peers.
Yeah. And I think the style or the look and feel in illustration, I mean, in many things, but for example, in illustration, is one of those, like, you know, first things and very crucial things for an illustrator. I mean, that's as an art director or as a client, that's almost like why you pick an illustrator to work with, because you want that vibe, that look and feel. So how intentional were you with developing your style? And how, I'm sure it's, you know, some personal, probably even like unconscious preferences, but at the same time, I'm sure there's like more considerations which come into play. So I'm curious, how did you go about that as you've been developing?
Definitely my first reference, as I told you before, my first reference was Berto Martinez here in Spain, also in Barcelona. And at the beginning, I just wanted to do what he was doing. But at the same time, I realized I couldn't be him. I needed to be myself. But he opened those doors to different artists, So then I started to look at French illustrators, to people like René Gros, who, by the way, he was Italian, but he developed his career mostly for French brands like Dior, for example. I think René Gros, he's the artist that changed the way I was looking, not also at illustration, but art in general. Mm-hmm. In my way, his name is not the big it should be. The way he was using his strokes totally blew my mind, because when you see his works, it is like you can see effortless. You can see who's doing it so easy. Mm-hmm. He was really controlling the media he was using. So that confidence in art and illustration, I first was aware of what confidence is looking at his work. Mm-hmm. And from him, then I understood other illustrators, other artists, but beginning with Berto Martinez and then René Gros, I think then I understood everything. I never wanted to keep myself in a style per se, even though obviously if you see my works, you can see something similar. But I also realized I wanted to explore different techniques and different medias and different final endings. So that's why I don't have particular, or at least I cannot see a particular signature. Mm-hmm. Maybe you think the opposite, but I like to approach every commission, every illustration as something different. I don't want to make out reference to my own work, at least not that much. And I like to explore watercolor in many ways, but I also love to explore ink in a more raw way. But yeah, definitely René Gros is the man for me.
Yeah.
He's the great master in illustration, in my eyes.
And how do you think about trends, or like what's trendy in illustration? How do you like relate to that, or how do you see that evolve?
I don't like trends in general, because as I said, I like long-term ideas. And when you follow a trend, there is a risk that that trend is not a trend anymore. So that's why I'm into what I think are more solid ways of representing images. And in fact, I think it's good to stay aware of trends, to know and recognize trends, and maybe to stay close to trends, because you don't want to be out of date. You want to stay in your times. But at the same time, I never wanted to be into the trends, because I want to do this for the rest of my life. I want to paint and do illustrations for the rest of my life. So I think if you are almost in a trend, if you are close to a trend, I think your work life can last longer. And I never want to be the hot guy, because tomorrow is going to be a different hot guy mm-hmm. in illustration. Because I have books of illustrators from 10 years ago and I don't see them anymore, and they were doing everything. It is great to achieve that. At the same time, it is a risk. If you don't evolve from what made you a star in illustration, it is a risk that obviously brands and people say, okay, I've seen this enough.
Yeah.
So it's all about balance. Obviously, you want to have success, but at the same time, being aware of your style somehow has to evolve.
Yeah,
I really want to see my work in 20 years and be able to identify different periods, even because I mastered one technique and you can see it through time, mm-hmm. or because I explored different mediums. So I kept evolving and not doing the same again and again. I would say that's against being creative, do the same thing again and again. And if you only make references about your own work, I'm not sure that's gonna make your journey an interesting one.
We've come to the last topic I've discussed with Chidi, As with previous guests, I've asked him to leave us with the final pieces of advice based on what he learned so far on his professional journey.
The ones that really helped me were, one, staying true to myself, and that relates to the topic we were discussing before, like not really following trends, not following what everybody's doing. Yeah, trends, but not only visual trends, but actually what other people is doing in their lives, in their, in their behavior, in their goals. So you really have to stay true to yourself. To do that, you have to know yourself. And to know yourself, in my opinion, is very important. The second recommendation, what would be, spend time alone. You're going to know who you are if you spend time by yourself, if you occasionally even travel alone and put yourself in situations where you are the one deciding what's going on. And the third one, which I talked about it already, it would be to stay close but not really into trends. So if you stay true to yourself by spending time alone, sometime, I don't want you to be an antisocial, because I'm not. But if you respect the time you spend with yourself, and then you can be aware of the trends, but you're not really into them, that would mean you're staying true to yourself. Unless stay true to yourself, it is a trend. Well, maybe then you are lucky. No, if you are into one specific thing and that specific thing, it is a super trend. Well, then you are lucky. But yeah, those would be the ones I recommend. Being the first one, the most important one. Stay true to yourself.
Hey everyone, that's it for this episode. I hope you found it useful. And if you like this podcast, tell a friend. I want to thank Chidi for coming to the show. I love his work, his approach, and I'm grateful for all the insights he shared. Links to Chidi's projects and some other things mentioned during the conversation can be found in the show notes at creative.voyage/podcast. I'm excited to share that the third issue of our publication, the Creative Voyage Paper, is available for pre-order. Alongside the One Lesson Learned and podcast edits, this winter edition features two new formats: a how-to guide with one of Mexico City's leading chefs, Lucho Martinez, and Object Lesson, where we talk to composer Robert Aiki Aubrey Lowe about his most prized personal possessions. And if you're listening to this before January 1st, 2022, now is the time to join our online workshop, The Mindful Creative Year. New Year's resolutions can work, and that is in your control. You can register now at creative.voyage/newyear. And lastly, if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe. Until next time, my friends, enjoy the journey.